Welcome to Marfa Mondays with your host, CM Mayo.
Cowboy Songs by Michael Stevens, Craig Carter, and Doug Figgs. And an interview with Michael Stevens. This is number 11 in the 24 podcast series, Marfa Mondays, exploring Marfa, Texas, and the Big Bend, 2012 to 2013, which is apropos of my book in progress about Far West Texas. It looks like the title is going to be World Waiting for a Dream, A Turn in Far West Texas. And I invite you to read more about that book and my several other books, and to listen in to all the other Marfa Mondays podcasts anytime on my website, www.cmmayo.com. This podcast was recorded on February 23rd, 2013, and by permission of the artists at the 27th Annual Cowboy Poetry Gathering at Sol Ross State University in Alpine, Texas. First up, accompanied by Zach Casey, is Michael Stevens of Alpine, Texas. Yes, those of you who know guitars, this is the Michael Stevens, one of the world's finest builders of electric stringed instruments. His appearance at the Cowboy Poetry Gathering was sponsored by the Pinitas Ranch and Ira Banton Jr. Michael Stevens.
The old double diamond, she lay east of Newport in the land of Buffalo. That auctioneer's a gavel, why she rapped and she rattled as I watch the old double diamond go. Won't you listen to the wind? Mother Nature's violin. When I first signed on to that old double diamond, I was a damn poor excuse, poor man. Didn't know how to aim, and my spirit was tame. Couldn't read all the cards in my hand. And the wind whipped the granite above me. Blew tumbleweeds clean through my soul. But I rode her horses. I fought those winters. And I took more than I thought I could stand. The battle with the land and the cattle, why, brings out the best in man. Guess a sailor needs his ocean, and a mama, baby's too old. I need these hills of Wyoming in the land of Buffalo. She's selling out, and I'm moving on, and I'm leaving with more than I came. Cause I've got this saddle, and it's not for sale. I've got a song I can sing. Got new trays to ride, and new knots to tie, in a land where cowboys. King. So So I turn tail to the wind, and that old double diamond, she disappeared in the sea.
Michael Stevens. Next up, Craig Carter, a singer and songwriter who ranches south of Marathon, Texas. Craig Carter has also worked as a wrangler and stuntman for several movies filmed in Marfa and the Big Bend area, including The Three Burials of Melquiades Estrada, No Country for Old Men, and The Legend of Hell's Gate. His participation in the Cowboy Poetry Gathering was sponsored by West Texas National Bank. The song you're about to hear him sing is called Crossing Jordan. As Carter describes it, it's about a young guy who gets into a jam and an older guy gets after him. And the lyrics give the alternating points of view.
Stop to see a friend. Said, I'd like to help you, boy, but they sent a ranger in. Now they say you shot him in the back. Maybe that ain't so. Well, I think I'd try my luck in Mexico. The other guy. I just finished up some business with a couple of cattle thieves, and I was leaving El Dorado when they got the word to me. Some cowboy shot that no good preacher's son, Angelo. Now I gotta catch him before Mexico. Now this kid, he ain't a bad one. Try to bring him in alive. But ever no good two-bit pistol slick is seeing dollar signs. And I got a real bad feeling. I wish I could just let him go. This badge won't let me quit till Mexico. I can blame my situation on the way life dealt the cards. But I set my fate in motion the day I left my daddy's farm. When you're out here chasing outlaws, can't see around the bend. You might be crossing Jordan before you reach that Rio Grande. Back to the kid. He ran into a bounty man sundown yesterday. And I know I wasn't worth the price that he had to pay. I read from Revelations as I rolled him in that hole. Turn my horse around for Mexico. I could smell that muddy river as the sun was coming up. I was dreaming senoritas till I saw that ranger's dust. How the hell he got around me, I guess I'll never know. There he is between me and Mexico. I can blame my situation on the way life dealt the cards. But I set my fate in motion the day I left my daddy's farm. When you see a ranger with a that Rio Grande. Well, there ain't a lot of difference between me and this here kid. Just a few short years ago, I might have been right where he is. And I know I can probably take him, but damn, I'm feeling old. And there's lots of senoritas in Mexico. Thank you. Yeah!
Next up is Doug Figgs, that's F-I-G-G-S, who traveled all the way from Lemitar, New Mexico, where, apart from working as a singer and songwriter and raising a few cows and horses, he runs a full-time farrier business. What does a farrier do? Trim and shoe horses' hooves. Doug Figgs' participation in the Cowboy Poetry Gathering was sponsored by the Maverick Inn and the Century Bar and Grill.
Last year, 2012, was a centennial year for the statehood of New Mexico. So I wrote this song for that, to celebrate that. And we played it on New Year's Eve, and I thought, man, this is the last time I get to play it. But I'm gonna play it again anyway.
Mexico.
We're going to hear some more music in this podcast, but I want to go back for a moment to put all this into some context by sharing with you some of my interview with Michael Stevens, which was recorded in one of the lounges at Sol Ross State University's University Center just before the show. Michael Stevens is the one you heard first in this podcast singing about the double diamond. My first question was, how did this all get started?
Well, it started out as just cowboys getting together. And when it really would happen in the old days, it was just, you know, people heard about these guys that get together and talk and BS and tell stories. And, you know, that's all they had. And, you know, it's an oral tradition of just like seamen. And there is a Fisherman Poets Society in Oregon, Washington, somewhere up there. I've forgotten where it is, around Siskiyou Pass, I think. It happens right about now. And, of course, they did it before we did it, you know. Ahab and, well, the ships were out there long before the cowboys were here. And they told stories and sang songs. And a lot of those songs and old Scottish and Irish ballads got turned into cowboy songs when the people came over here. Instead of singing about whales in the ocean or whatever they did, they took that melody. And I believe Streets of Laredo is the Bard of Ammoron or something like that. So, and it's an old melody that they just changed the words to. You know, they weren't musicians particularly. And a lot of times they didn't carry instruments, so a lot of it, you'll hear a cappella, a lot of what those guys had, or they took an instrument out, fell apart. Banjos seemed to last longer than guitars and things like that. But so it's a real old tradition of telling stories, and it gets moved to the next person because a lot of those people didn't write. And so what the cowboys picked up on and started, and at some point, a few people, John Lomax and his son, and they started recording these songs. Well, there were people before that, even, that were some of the cowboys that were starting to collect the songs. The first gathering of this type that I know of was Elko. And I believe
Elko,
that
Elko, Nevada.
Elko, Nevada. They'd created a folklore center, and that, you know, I've never studied the history of that either, because you'd have to, if you could get a hold of Joel Nelson, he might fill you in a little bit more, but you can Google all that. And about 85, well, Joel Nelson and his wife at the time, Barney Nelson, who's a teacher here and writer, got some really neat books out, they went, heard about it. And Joel's always been into poetry. He reads Robert Service, he reads Pushkin, name it. And if he sits down and does The Road Not Taken by Robert Frost with a big mustache and a cowboy hat, you think it's the best cowboy poem you ever heard, and then he says Robert Frost, and people, you can see people go, oh, that's why it seemed familiar to me. It's just because it's kind of what cowboys do, you know. They go the other way. If they wanted to make a lot of money, they wouldn't be a cowboy. So they came back here the next year after Elko and started a little gathering here. And I wasn't here at the time. I was in Austin building guitars, but I'd gone from a horse ranch in McKinney to Austin and been in and out of the horse business since I was a little kid. And then when I came down here, my wife wanted to live here, and she was not living anywhere else, and I heard about it. And then a friend of a friend, a girl that we known in college, had married Warren Burnett, the trial lawyer from Odessa. And then I'd met Warren, and he one day said, I hadn't gone to the gathering. He said, you should go meet Buck Ramsey. He's my friend. He's the guy in the wheelchair, and if anybody gives you any trouble, well, Warren says, if anybody gives you any shit, you tell him. Because that's the way Warren was. I don't know if you know anything about Warren Burnett. He was a, you know. Anyway, so I met Buck Ramsey and played music. Well, it turned out I knew a couple cowboy songs, and I didn't even know they were cowboy songs, because I've been in Berkeley since I got there in 67, played a lot of music, and country music. And
out in California?
Yeah. I hit there. I left Fort Worth in 67 and got there in November of 67. I had, you know, cowboy outfit with bell bottoms, embroidered shirts, and long hair. And they called me the sheriff. And we played country music, and Cody was there, and we played the same kind of venues that Commander Cody, and then they said, you won't believe who's coming from Ann Arbor, so we'll sleep at the wheel. So I was out there, and when I came, and I learned a bunch of folk songs, hanging around the freight and salvage and those things. Well, it turns out a bunch of them were cowboy songs, and I heard a lot of Jack Elliott and all that, and well, there's a bunch of cowboy songs stuck in there. So I got down here, and somehow, after meeting Buck and playing, so they said, well, we need some more performers. Would you come and, you know, we'll stick you in a session and, you know, sing a few songs. And I went, hey, I like this. And so...
What year was that?
That would be about 93, 4.
I'm and you've sure. been coming back every year since?
Well, I live here. You know,
so you've come to all the Cowboy Poetry Gatherings?
Well, I was on the committee for 16 years. And of the 16 years, I think I was vice president about 3 and president for 7 at least. I just retired from the 25th year. This is my second year. This is my first year as a performer, as a, you know, as a civilian.
A little further into the interview, Michael Stevens talked about after Berkeley, how he came back to Texas. But then you're going to hear him backtrack and talk some more about his time in Berkeley at the Freight and Salvage. That was the hub of the folk music scene.
And when I bailed out of there, I went right to a ranch in Weatherford and started training Arabian horses. Got back in the horse business and did that till the late 70s. And decided, you know, economy was getting bad for the horse show business. The oil business was tanking down about then, you know, and things were slowing down. And so I went back to Austin. I had a shop full of guitars. And I had been a repairman and had a famous shop in Berkeley called Guitar Resurrection. A buddy and I, he started it, and I fell in with that, and I was there. And then I was the first hoot master at the Freight and Salvage Coffee House. I went there the first night, and the first open mic night I played with Mike and Debbie, and knew everybody. I knew Elizabeth Cotton, used to tune her guitar, and it was old Jesse did. I got the blues from a baby down by the San Francisco Bay. He used to come play. Jesse Fuller knew Jesse really well, and he had the footadella. I don't know if you remember that three-note thing he played with his foot, and it was always falling apart because it was made like a... And I was always gluing it back together for old Jesse, and he played that 12-string. Those were good days back in then. All the folkies came through there. Everybody came through the Freight and Salvage. So I picked up lots and lots of folk songs, and I'd been playing Peter, Paul, and Mary. But early in Ohio State, I'd run across Ian and Sylvia and loved Four Strong Winds. But on those albums, Ian would always have a horse. One album he had chaps on, buck-stitched, but no hat. You go, well, there's just a little hint. Something's going on here that he's, you know. So I played him and Peter, Paul, and Mary stuff. And actually got to play with Peter, Paul, and Mary at Kerrville one year. We all did Puff the Magic Dragon.
Oh, my God.
And I got to hug Mary. And we looked out, and everybody who had played that weekend was there. We were all on stage with them, and like 5,000 matches went off. So hit a few good licks, you know. But all of it, you know, in there, still being a cowboy. And when the ranch was not doing good, and Alan was thinking of trading off, and Margaret was going to go back to Colorado. Her grandmother was Governor Evans's daughter. So she went back to Evans Ranch. And I decided to go back to Berkeley. I had a job offer in Salina, Kansas, but cold as hell up there, and it was dry. I went, no. So I went back to Austin and opened a shop, and like in no time I had Stevie Vaughn and everybody there, Eric Johnson, pick a guy. I mean, Junior Brown, listen to Junior.
So everybody who's anybody came through your shop?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Because I had, you know, I had this reputation from Berkeley, and, you know, Country Joe was my customer, and Jesse Colin Young, and Nick Ravenitis, and Bob Weir the Dead. And so I had this thing moving along, trailing along. But when I got out here, I took a job at Fender. Then I went out and started their custom shop in 1987, went on the payroll in 86. And did that for about 4 years and hung out with California Cowboys then up in the valley, different kind of buckaroos guys. And was playing a lot of music still. And then when I got back, here's when I blundered into this thing, and I ran into Buck Ramsey, and then went out to dinner, and there was a table with 2 chairs, empty, and this guy waved at me. And I think it was the same weekend, I'm not sure, it could have been the next year, but, well, it was J.B. Allen. And so my gurus are Joel Nelson, J.B. Allen, and Buck Ramsey. And if you look at the heroes of cowboy poetry, especially in Texas, you know, I fell in with the guys. This was like, I started right at the top, learning what to do and how it worked, and you know, didn't learn to sing the, or, you know, understand what the right songs are, what the good songs, and what, you know, I mean, I know Riders in the Sky. My old band, we played with them, open for them, but they're great. But there's not a cowboy among them. I don't know if you know those guys. But,
no.
You know, Woody Paul, the fiddler's a nuclear physicist. But they do all the Hollywood, the beautiful Sons of the Pioneer stuff. Those guys are great. But we don't, they go to Elko, but we don't invite them here. I like to think the whole time when I was on the committee that I didn't hire any cowboys that were less, I wanted to be the lowest qualified cowboy that we had. So
in other words, the people who come are really cowboys.
They got something going somewhere in there. And then we have a wiggly line. You know, it's, you can't, if you did that really hardcore line, you could have a lot of mediocre music, some bad poetry. You know, Andy Wilkinson is Charlie Goodnight's great grandson and Goodnight Loving Trail. And Andy is not a cowboy. He says the toughest thing he ever wrangled was a Piggly Wiggly cart with a bad wheel. But he writes beautifully, and he understands the genre. And there are some of those people that get it. They.
How would you describe the genre?
Well, they love the job they do. They love their animals. They appreciate the land. Have you been driven around the country and seen cowboy churches? You ever seen a farmer church? I've never seen anybody sing about their tractor. You know, the sailors sing about their ships, but the cowboys, they love that. And then, of course, intermixed in all this stuff got to be the movie cowboys. Started crossing over and getting confused in the 20s and 30s with the real cowboys. If you look at old books, you can see that they were cowboys, but then you start adding Tom Mix and those guys in there, and you see a little change in dress and a little, and that's one thing. These guys have you're out on a Brandon crew or something like that. There is definitely, there's rules, there's a pecking order. There are, it's almost not quite a dress code, but as much as horse show guys, all their hats match and everything's the same, and you can't, But if you go around the country and look at cowboys, they're definitely regionalized. Great Basin cowboys, the Buckaroos, Oregon, Eastern Oregon, up in there. A little bit different Southern California. They call them still Buckaroos, but it's a bastardization of Vaquero. So those California guys, a little different than those guys, just a smidge. No. But then as you come east, by the time you get to Texas, and they call them the grazer bit guys here. And the country's so rough and rugged that you don't see the fancy gear, because the brush tear it all up. But you can tell a lot of times by their hats and their outfits, and you can tell how they rigged their saddles. You know, they get into that, and there's rules to go out and work.
And so, how are the far west Texas cowboys different from the others?
Well, they pretty much cross Texas. It's almost the same. Although you'll get a few of us who like the west coast style and stuff, and I mix it together. Some people do. It's sort of neat that is really divisionalized like that. But I like a little of both. I'm kind of open-minded, and I'll do some stuff, and they'll get on me for what side of my spur strap my buckles are on.
Now, what about the charros when you cross the border?
Well, that's where it all came up. Everything they learned came up from Mexico, because that society was down there a lot longer.
Well, in terms of handling the horses and the cattle.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in terms of the music.
I don't know the history of the charros, but I do know that they, they sing, they play the guitars, they get their own and all that. And so, the songs that have been translated to me, it's very similar. It's also, if you go to the steppes of Russia, if you go to, France, where they're riding rubber boots. And then you got South American, you got gauchos. I wanted to do a world tour show and just call it Horsemen of the World and have translators. I wanted to take that show worldwide and have those Russian guys that ride those funny saddles, and they head sing, that funny yodel doodle.
Yeah, the throats. Singers, yeah. From Mongolia?
Yeah, those guys. I would like to have them, two kinds of Argentines. I want the Frenchmen to sing, vaqueros, and move it around the country and let them sing in their own language. And the translator would just say he's singing about his favorite mare, who just, had a filly and she died. And he misses her, but he has great hopes for her. Just whatever it's going on, just let him sing and play.
And for a city person listening for the first time, what would you tell them?
Well, it's like Dale was saying today in the writing thing. He said, and some songs won't do it to you, but what Dale was saying that a good song really should do, that even if you can't relate to it, and he did a song called, that I'd never heard, I guess it's been out for a while, called The Sign on the, I think, Daddy's Sign on the Gate, or The Sign on the Gate that Daddy made or something, about the ranch. Well, the guy got hard up and needed a job, so he went to town, and he wears a blue pinstripe shirt that's got his name on it. He says, "Yes, ma'am, yes, sir, can I help you?" And at the end of the day, he goes back over the hill and he sees that ranch, and he's paying for that ranch because, and he has to work in town. He doesn't like it. So you don't even have to be paying for a ranch. If you listen to that song, you get the idea of what, if you sacrifice to get something you really wanted, you know. And people will get an insight if they have no clue, if they're open-minded and listening. I mean, there's a lot of cowboy poetry that's comic, and there's a lot of comedy in it, you know. And sometimes, you know, it's funny to listen to it, but it hurt when it happened. Guys getting bucked off and problems and getting kicked. And R.P. Smith is just incredibly funny, and he's got a way with, and he'll do real serious things, and then he'll do funny things, like he was talking about, you know. So he's up in Nebraska someplace like that in the wintertime, you're calving in the winter, you know, and trying to help pull these calves out of here, and you slip and the calf comes out, and well, the calf's all wet and it hits the sheet metal, and so he's got a calf stuck to the sheet metal, you know, like you do, have it, yeah, stuck in your lip or your glass, yeah, and you're just trying to imagine a calf, a wet calf stuck to the sheet metal building that's not insulated, and he's talking about running outside, and he run around the back, and of course he said you can see where the calf is because he can see what's melting on the sheet metal on the backside, so you go out there and kick him off and run back in, and you know, and it's funny, but and of course, you, yeah, know, the same thing with show horses, everybody wants those babies born as soon as he can in January, so at the end of the year you got the big baby in the class. Mm-hmm. And then she'd get out there in the barn and, you know, sleeping in the barn. And, you know, when I was doing it, we finally had a little funky, cheapy little TV camera in one stall. And it wasn't even panning, so I could set it up where I could maybe hit two stalls. But then we had, fortunately, a cat called Other who walked the stalls. But the cat knew who was going to have the baby first because he wanted the afterbirth. You know, it's a cat. He didn't eat, you know. And so you'd have the camera set up, and pretty soon you look at it, and you see Other going back and forth down here, and you go, that mare's going to foal first, and see, we better move the camera or go down there or just go to the barn with your cot, because the cat knows more than we do. You know, we're watching these two mares, and you can tell what they're doing, whether they're moving around or whether they're going to have a baby, but, you know, if you missed it, the cat never missed it.
Well, that's something a city person would not think of.
I guess not, you know. But, and so there's storytellers like that. Apache Adams got the funniest stories in the world. He doesn't do anything that rhymes. It's just stories that he's collected over his life because he's cowboyed all of his life and funny as hell. And, you know, Baxter Black that had that show today, he's a veterinarian. He's kind of a stand-up comedian veterinarian. It ties all that kind of stuff together. You know, what I really like the best is the ranch focus, the life oak style, even though I don't get to do it 24 hours a day anymore. I love my horses and I love the work and how you handle the stock. If you go see a rodeo, that's way different than a ranch. You'd have to go see a ranch rodeo to know what real ranch work is kind of like, because what you see at a rodeo is like on, you know, it's on steroids.
It's a show.
It's the worst bucking horses they can find, the biggest steers, you know, and it's all timed. And it gets down to finesse, but it's still different than if you went to a Brandon pen and worked with a bunch of guys. And there's rules, you know. When you ride out of camp and that you're going with it, you know, and the owner of a company will come to, you've got big, big ranches, they'll have camp men who run this many sections, maybe 40 sections. Well, owner will come and that guy will start the cowboys out, tell them where to go, and out you go, and you don't cut in front of the older men. And if the fences or gates are bad, and everybody and somebody's and you know, just everybody rides through, turn around if that guy has to get off to get the fence closed, if it's, and then every one of those guys will thank that guy who's closed the gate, and they will not move their horses until he's on his horse, and he's trapped in between them, around. They're all circled around him. Mm-hmm. And that way, if he's riding a young colt and that colt decides to blow up, well, you know, even if the guy got dumped there, one of those guys would catch the horse. And you just don't cut off people. And
so it's kind of like a military operation out there.
You know, and you start out, because you get so far apart out here, a lot of times the guy's half a mile over there. The only reason you know it's him is because of a red shirt. And the guy on the other side was wearing a blue shirt. And then when you come into camp, they want you that way. As you squeeze in on those cows, you want to come in with the yellow shirt guy, the blue shirt guy, your shirt, this red shirt guy, and you don't cross over. Only on rare occasions do you cross over. And the guys understand when that happens, if it's the real necessity. You cross into somebody's country, but you immediately go back. Mm-hmm. And the young guys don't give the older guys any trouble. And you ride out of camp in the order you're going to be in.
Similar to a ship?
Kind of. You're not against those rules. You're trying to learn them. You know, this is something that's respected, and you're not mad because they're making you do that. You know, it's if you're going to go in that, you're going to go in, you're going to learn, you're going to do what they say. And eventually, at some point, somebody will say, well, you made a hand today, and that's what you're looking for. I mean, that's the compliment. If they say, you made a hand today, that's all. I remember the first time I heard it, I was just like, man, it swelled up. I just could hardly stand it. I couldn't wait to get home to tell Alice. I'd been paying attention. I just had one of those good days that everything went right. A couple younger guys in there that I was cracking on their heads, you know. And one young calf blew out of the pens, and it turned out my wife was waiting when we came in, and she was standing on the roof of the Isuzu, and we all brought the cattle around, and one of his calf just got up and looked around. And his mom was in there somewhere, but he didn't know that. And he looked around, and as soon as I saw his head go up like a goose, I knew he was leaving. And he's a little bitty thing, and he took off back where we came from with about three dogs as big as he was. And, you know, I was kind of at the back in drag position, and I just spun my horse and went after him and roped him right in the middle of those dogs, because they're up there grabbing him by the ears and grabbing him on the lips and grabbing him on the leg. Big dogs, big catahoulas.
Scary.
And roped him and jerked him out of there and hollered the dogs, and they just stopped. I mean, they know what they're doing, you know. But the minute I got a rope on him, they quit. And so I brought him back into camp, leading him like a puppy. I didn't have him dallied up on his saddle horn or anything. Well, Alice got a picture of that. And it was the phone book cover down here a few years back, you know. And she's a real good photographer. And it just happened right where she was, you know. And that was the day. Came home later and said, well, finally heard it. And she said, yeah. I said, yep. Yeah. Vaughn looked at me today at the end and said, you made a hand today.
Two last songs. First one, Michael Stevens.
This is not an old cowboy song, but the cowboys have pretty much adopted this song, so we like it a lot. Don't know if the guy wrote it knew anything about cowboying at all. And it was Greg Carter's dad's favorite song. Thick midnight till dawn. Moon, she's as bright as a reading light. Old letter from an old friend back home. And he asked me, why do you ride for your money? Why do you rope for short pay? Ain't getting nowhere and losing your share. He said we run on the Jenny last April. She's married and she's got a good life. You sure missed the track when you never come back. Why, she's a perfect professional wife. And she asked me, why does he ride for the money? Why does he roll for short pay? Ain't getting nowhere and losing his share. Why, I almost be crazy out there. Want to take one? Take one.
rest of my letter. And I tore off the stamps for old Jim. And old Tommy Vaughn rode up to relieve me right then. He just peered at my letter and he grinned. He asked me, why don't they ride for the money? Why don't they rope for short pay? Ain't it getting nowhere and losing their share? Why, they all must be crazy to live way back there. They never seen a northern lights. Never seen a hawk on the wing. Never seen the spring to the great divide. Never heard old Craig Carter sing.
Song, we're going to swing back to Craig Carter with Lorena, a song set in the Big Bend town of Lajitas on the old Comanche Trail. Lajitas sits on a bluff overlooking the San Carlos Ford of the Rio Grande. In other words, it's right on the U.S.-Mexico border.
Bend in the river on the banks of the old Rio Grande. While Mexican moonlight played on the water, we silently danced in the sand. Secretly danced in the sand. One stormy midnight she came to me crying through teardrops, tried to explain how blue Spanish blood should not mix with the gringo, and it's forbidden to see me again. I'll never see you again. And I love you, Lorena. The sun always sets in your eyes. Those shadows have come between us. Lorena, I need you tonight. Headed north, away from those memories, trying to outride the pain. Stumbled through canyons and crawled over mountains, only to find you again. You always find me again. Yo te quiero al morir, sobre todas las siempre estarás en mi corazón. Veo tu cara cada vez que sueño y tengo la misma pasión. Siempre tengo pasión.
For Marfa Mondays with your host, CM Mayo, at cmmayo.com/podcasts.
Traveler's Literary Companion. The Los Angeles Times Book Review calls it a book to throw in a suitcase on the way to Mexico or just settling into a favorite patio chair. It will open your eyes and fill you with pleasure. Mexico Connect says, discovering it was like opening a door and walking into a brightly lit room filled with all kinds of literary treasures. Mexico, a Traveler's Literary Companion. 24 Mexican writers on Mexico, selected by award-winning writer and translator C.M. Mayo, is available from Whereabouts Press. Look for it in bookstores and all major online booksellers. Hear a country speak. Find out more about Mexico, a Traveler's Literary Companion, at cmmayo.com. Baja California is a place where nothing is as it seems. Cleaved from the Mexican mainland by the Sea of Cortez and separated from the rest of North America by a multitude of cultural and economic differences, the nearly 1,000-mile-long peninsula is scarred by imperial transgressions, yet blessed with extraordinary natural beauty. The very air here is miraculous, wrote John Steinbeck, and outlines of reality change with the moment. It was desire that first took C.M. Mayo to Baja California, but only a longing for understanding could produce this exquisite portrait of the other Mexico. Intimate, perceptive, and incomparably rich, C.M. Mayo's miraculous air will delight readers who already know and love Baja California and provide a memorable introduction for those who know it primarily as a distant source of allure. Available now in paperback from Milkweed Editions and ebook from Dancing Chiva.